Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Patreon. Start creating on your own terms. Sign up today at patreon.com. That's patreon.com. Today's episode is also brought to you by Hover. Hover knows that you're going to do something that will make a difference. Grab your domain name at hover.com/accidentalcreative for a 10% discount on all new purchases. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, including the new book, The Motivation Code, which is available now wherever books are sold. So we have five senses that we use as we navigate the world, but one of those senses is often impacting us in ways that we're unaware of. We're often not cognizant of how the sonic environment, the sounds around us, are affecting our emotions, affecting our perception of the world, and giving us cues about how we should behave, what we should do. On today's show, we have Dallas Taylor. He's the host of the 20,000 Hertz podcast, which is part of the TED network of podcasts, where he shares stories behind some of the world's most recognizable and interesting sounds. And he's also the creative director of DeFacto Sound, which is a sound design source for the world's most thoughtful brands. He's a sound designer, a consultant, and a writer. And we talked about where some of the common sounds that we might experience in our world come from, the importance of how we think about sound, how we interact with sound in our world. We even got into a little bit of music nerdery in terms of how music is mixed today versus how it used to be mixed, and some ways that we can maybe structure our sonic world so that we can have a better, sort of more peaceful, more focused life experience. I loved this conversation. I think you're going to love it too. So we'll get into my conversation with Dallas Taylor in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Patreon. So as a creator, it can feel like you're making stuff for practically everyone but yourself. Patreon is a creator-founded membership platform where you can build a reliable income stream to fuel your creative independence. No advertisers, no algorithms, no mainstream gatekeepers holding your paycheck or telling you what to do. On Patreon, the people who love what you make can directly support it with paid subscriptions. And in return, they'll get access to exclusive content and custom rewards. Find the creative freedom to do your best work and the financial stability to make it possible. So if you're an illustrator, if you're a video creator, a podcaster, an artist, or a creative person of any kind, sign up today at patreon.com. That's patreon.com and start creating on your own terms. We thank Patreon for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's great to have on the show today, Dallas Taylor. Dallas is the host of the 20,000 Hertz podcast, and he also is a creative director of DeFacto Sound, a sound design company. Welcome, Dallas, to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Thanks, Todd. I'm very honored to be here.
So I've been listening to your show. Absolutely love it. Very excited to have you on the podcast today. But I have to start with, for those who maybe aren't sound professionals, what's with the name 20,000 Hertz?
20,000 Hertz. So it's all spelled out there. That's one thing. But that is the threshold of our human hearing, or at least it's the threshold of human hearing for babies and small children, because as we get older, we kind of lose that high end. But essentially, like, what a hertz is it's like a cycle. Like, sound is like a pressure wave and then like a vacuum. It's if you think of a speaker cone, it pushes out and then it pulls in. That's how sound moves through the air. And that's measured by hertz. So if you had like 20 hertz, it's 20 cycles of that motion, a really low sound. And then as you sweep up, it becomes 10,000 hertz, or 1,000 hertz, then 10,000 hertz, and then all the way up to 20,000 hertz. But yeah, there's a lot of tests online that that people can take and just be sad that their hearing doesn't go all the way up to that. But kids generally do.
Yeah, and as an aging musician that I am, I will admit that probably the high end boundary of my hearing is probably much lower at this point than 20,000 hertz, I would imagine.
I think mine caps out even at 16. It's like 16,200 or somewhere around there. But it's totally just age based. So totally normal. Nothing to be ashamed of. But yes, I'm also an aging musician.
What you need to do is just change the name of your show every year to be the top boundary of your hearing, right? So next year it'll be like 15.9 hertz, 15,900 hertz. All right, so we're talking about sound, and the nature of your show is that you explore the origins of various kinds of sound, and specifically, I mean, some of the shows that I've been listening to are phenomenal, just so exciting. You're talking about where various sounds that we've become familiar with in our culture have come from, but we often don't think about. How did you become interested in this topic?
So I've been a sound designer for 20 years, and even in my industry, it seems like sound takes a really far back seat to visuals. And we have these five senses as humans. We have sight, we have taste, we have touch, we have smell, and we have hearing. In the world that I work in, which is kind of like film, television, advertising, even in this highly visual, obviously visual kind of industry, the only two human senses that we have is what we see and what we hear. And there's always been this like disconnect that the things that we hear can also be incredibly impactful. So I figured if my industry has a hard time thinking about the possibilities with sound, then the general culture out there probably has no idea or no clue. So I wanted to make a show for like a sound show for like everyone and not just audiophiles, which I have a problem with just kind of like audiophilism and gatekeeping in general. But yeah, so I wanted to make a show that like really allowed for us to curate and appreciate our sense of hearing, just like, our sense of sight. We curate. You don't have to be like an artist to appreciate visual aesthetics. You don't have to be like a 3 Michelin starred chef to appreciate what you like to eat and taste. You don't have to be like an HVAC technician to enjoy the fact that you can control your climate to where your sense of touch is appealed, or you don't have to be like a chemist to understand that ibuprofen helps get rid of a headache. And then finally, like, you don't have to be like a soap maker to love the sense of smell. But with hearing, we've kind of put that entire thing in a box of like music and nothing else. And the reality is that the sonic world, the vast majority of the sonic world is not music. And so I wanted to make a show for normal people who could really crystallize that idea in their head.
Well, let's talk about some of the ways maybe that sound is important in our world that we don't consider, we don't think about, and we don't even notice because we're not really training ourselves to notice it. What are some ways in which sound is important, but most people probably wouldn't consider?
In the most obvious sense, it does like harmful sounds, or not even harmful sounds, but just like dissonance and unease can cause a lot of internal stress and anxiety and raise like cortisol levels, which can kind of contribute to heart disease and things like that. I'm not a doctor, so I hope I got that right. All I know is that harmful sounds can cause a lot of stress. And stress, we have so much of it in our life. And it would be great to find little ways to reduce that level of stress. And so for me, and this isn't like everyone in New York City, but like if you're in New York City, I have a really hard time sleeping when I'm there because I'm just not used to garbage trucks and the constant motion and the constant movement of that city. For me, I get very poor sleep because of that. Some people need the city sounds because they grew up in that. But generally, like we've kind of like culturally decided that loud sounds are good sounds. We kind of done that with restaurants, and we've done that with concerts. And the fact is like our ears are not like made for that. We're in the first generation or the first couple generations in the entirety of human history that's listening to sound on such a high threshold. And what our brains really crave is like the sound of nature. And that's, it's how calming like a hike can be, of course, because of the wind and things like that. But just the sound is something our brain really craves. In the entirety of human history, it's really been absorbing natural sounds. And then now, in the last few generations, we've replaced natural sounds with a lot of human-made sounds. And what I would like, and some human-made sounds are amazing, but what I'd like for people to do is try to reduce some of these just like annoying sounds, whether it be like a community effort or just somebody in their, you know, apartment putting WD-40 on a squeaky door or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned that many of these man-made sounds are maybe not harmful, but certainly not comforting, right, to us. And one of the things that I often lament to my kids is just the state of the current music industry. You know, there's a dynamic that is, you know, it's called compression. Basically, it's like a post-production process that you can use with music. And so much of modern music is compressed to the point where there's very little dynamic range, right? So there are very little peaks, but very little troughs. Everything's kind of all in the same bandwidth. And then if you listen to an old record, like, and you listen to it actually on vinyl and you sort of an analog format, there's such a dynamic range in so much of the music, and it gets really, really quiet, and then it gets really, really loud, but you have this sort of like ebb and flow to the sound, like sonically. And it's so much more enjoyable to listen to that kind of music than it is to listen to something that's sort of been squeezed within an inch of its life. And I think that goes along with some of the other things. Like, most of us live in a comfort controlled environment all the time. You know, we're always comfortable year round. We have air conditioning, we have heat, you know, we don't have to go out and endure the elements very much, you know. And I think the same thing is happening with our sound, where we're sort of like, we're sort of squeezing it to the point where it just feels very manufactured, very fake. We're not really experiencing the ebb and flow and highs and lows of what authentic natural sound is like.
There's so much to unpack here. It's so great that you brought this up. So compression, it sounds so boring to normal people. And we did a two-part series on mastering about this exact thing. And the interesting thing about compression and this dynamic range concept that you're talking about is that these are slowly, like, as older bands and older musical groups, as it becomes more modern, they're remastering and remixing a lot of this stuff. So you don't even realize that, like, the Beatles were more dynamic 10 years ago before they did a remaster, because it always gets replaced on iTunes and Spotify and all those things. And so it's almost like a revisionist history of sorts, like, that we're doing even with music. And so to jump into that concept a little bit more, I think it has to do with also putting earbuds in your ear, and you're having to compete with all of these other sounds. So when you have, you know, it's not natural to have speakers a millimeter away from your eardrum, one, but we're having to produce for that thing. And so when we're talking about compression and dynamic range, it's like, let's think about it like in the visual sense. When we talk about mastering, and a lot of people are like, why do I care about mastering? It's almost like every image that you see being as bright and white as possible. And how do you really have like visual dynamic range if you don't have light and dark? Or and that's kind of like the loud and quiet. It'd be like every image you ever saw was just brightened all the way to the max, and kind of just in this very small bandwidth. That's kind of what's happening with music. And it's not like I always try to go back to like what's natural for our ears. And what's natural for our ears is to have quiet and loud, and to have, you know, whites and darks, you know, things like that. Have dissonance and have harmony. That's another thing that in our world, when we think of like dissonance and harmony, I always find that like when we're doing like a scary trailer or something, it's kind of easy to make things dissonant, because you can kind of throw anything at a sound design piece. And if you're not thinking about it, it just kind of naturally comes out dissonant. So dissonance is pretty easy. Harmony is hard. And if we translate that to our normal world, when things are not designed or thought of, our world just naturally 99% of the time is just very dissonant. And that's not something that we really like want. Whereas if you go out in nature, like generally it's very harmonic, unless there's like a predator that's about to eat you.
Right. And that's an important point. I mean, when you hear something that shocks you in nature, it's usually something that is like a warning sign to you, right? Like dissonant sounds are warning signs, like shrieks and things like that.
but we don't need like constant notifications and interruptions. Mm-hmm. That is not good for our brain. That's kind of putting yourself in a constant state of, there's a word for it, but I can't think of it. It's like a reaction fatigue. When you can kind of be pinged and interrupted at any moment in your life, like that is not healthy, because you kind of get in a constant state of anxiety that it might happen, that you might be pinged or something like that. So I always recommend like turn off your notifications, let your phones and devices work for you, not the other way around.
See, it's what's interesting is that this is the way that our culture is trending, not just with sound. I mean, sound is sort of like maybe the canary in the coal mine, that we're moving and moving closer and closer to like 0 dB. Everything is like peaked out all the time, right? But I think also just we're doing that with our attention. We're maximizing our attentional, like you said, we're being pinged all the time. We're minimizing our attentional bandwidth. Instead, we're sort of squeezing as much as we can out of every moment, where that's constantly refreshing Twitter or constantly refreshing Instagram or going, you know, checking the news. And there are no peaks and troughs. There's no ebb and flow. There's no rhythm in our life anymore. Yeah. Everything is maxed out all the time. And, you know, that's with sound, that's with our visuals, that's with our attention. It seems like that's just the trajectory that we're on as a culture right now.
And I think it's easy to see that as the trajectory of our culture, especially with people who spend a lot of time on the internet, like myself, and has an audience and kind of interacting, and especially with COVID and all that stuff. But I have been really encouraged by a lot of young people who are really trending the other way. I don't know about you, but like when I was, 20 or, 15 to 20 or so, like I looked at people my age as like, they're so out of touch and they have no idea what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I hope that in a lot of ways, especially with like notification fatigue and kind of sound and stuff, I hope, that the people who are disconnecting, are setting a trend for, the next generation.
Hey everyone, just want to take a quick minute to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Hover. So if you've visited accidentalcreative.com or toddhenry.com or any of our domains, you have experienced Hover, even though you may not have known it, because we purchase all of our domain names with Hover. With Hover, you can register a domain name for your design portfolio or for any creative project you have going on. As a matter of fact, Hover has over 400 domain name extensions to choose from when building your brand online. So no matter what area of the creative space you're in, there's a domain name waiting for it, from .design to .art to .inc, .photo, and so much more. You'll find excellent technical support available to answer any questions that you may have. Hover has best-in-class customer and technical support. In fact, we've had to leverage Hover's technical support, and they have always been so responsive and unbelievably helpful. They offer domains and email to pair with your domain, so you can do everything in one place. And again, as I mentioned, there are over 400 domain name extensions to choose from. Hover knows that you're going to do something that will make a difference. So grab your domain name at hover.com/accidentalcreative for a 10% discount on all new purchases. Again, that's hover.com/accidentalcreative. Make a name for yourself with Hover. And now back to the interview with Dallas Taylor. Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk a little more about the show and specifically about some of the things that you've discovered. Is there a story that you uncovered on the show that especially surprised you or delighted you in some way?
So many. There are so many as far as like surprise and delight. The one that jumps out right away is that the Netflix to dumb sound, you know, the thing that you hear.
Love that episode, by the way.
Or when you turn on Netflix, it goes, da-dung. Well, that story had never been told of where that came from. And so it took us all a year to find who did it and kind of what were all the iterations to get to that point. They had all kinds of different versions of it. One that was like bubbles. There were just like any Sonic brand, they went through like, it took us a year to find the people, and it took them a year to make it, even though it's super short, but they went through all kinds of focus groups and they had all kinds of different versions. But the thing that's the most surprising is that they almost put a goat bleat response at the end of that sound. So no joke. And they wouldn't let me play it on the air as the direct source file, but they were like, you are welcome to talk about it and you're welcome to recreate it. But like they played it for me, like, no joke. This is exactly what it sounded like. It went
What was the rationale behind the goat?
The rationale is like it has something to do with a call and response. I can't remember the specifics. It's in the show, but I remember the person who was leading that had something to do with like the thought of like a goat response or like a back and forth type of idea. And sometimes like when you're doing super creative branding and stuff, you can almost get like too in the trees rather than outside of the, you know, looking over the forest. And that was one that I think it was just a little bit too close up. And what's funny is we ended the show with that of like the brand design, the person at Netflix saying like, thank God I didn't go with the goat. Like that's like, they're so thankful that they didn't do that.
What was funny to me about that story was I think at some point they had a bunch of different Sonic identifiers that they were kind of playing with or trying to decide between. And I think he played them, the person leading the project played them for his daughter. And his mm-hmm. daughter was like, that's the one. I mean, like so clearly
like,
pointed at the
so obvious.
Yeah, it's like it's so obvious. That's clearly the one. But again, you get, and this is true of any kind of creative work, you get so in the weeds that sometimes you can't see what's obvious, what's right in front of you, because you've been thinking about it so much for so long.
Yeah. And even something as simple as like a 10-year-old daughter can just clarify all this when you're too stuck in it.
For sure. So speaking of that and speaking of process, are there any common patterns that you've uncovered within, you know, people who are doing this work or people who are trying to communicate through sound in some way? Are there any common patterns you've discovered about how we arrive at the sounds that have become so culturally iconic?
Yes. So it's kind of a two-parter here. I think that the thing that I see the most when it comes to sound is the idea that you need permission in order to craft sound. And we have this idea of like sound as being like this person who's been doing it for 40 years in a dark room with a lot of faders and knobs, and you go in and you don't question that. Like you don't poke the bear, like they're the expert and you're, you know, kind of walking in, you know, and have to default to them. But the reality is like, especially when sound is achieved on the highest levels, there's this whole idea of like, there's no permission needed. Like if an editor wants to do a full sound design pass, an editor has the full right to do that. There's no, everyone can enjoy sound and craft it and do all these things. Like there's no, you don't have to do this, you know, only with the people who consider them themselves audiophiles or sound designers. So the thing that I always kind of encourage people is like, you're welcome to toy around with sound, especially when we're talking about trailers and advertising and film and television. And yeah, so the thing that I've kind of seen when things go really well, it's when a lot of people don't have that, oh no, I can't have an opinion on this. They just understand that that this is something we can all chime in on. Exactly like what I was talking about before with our senses. Like you don't have to be a chef to enjoy food, like the same thing with sound.
I love that. So if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the show, better understand this topic, where would you send them?
I would say to the podcast, especially because we're talking to you from a podcast right now. So wherever you are right now, you can simply just type in 20,000 Hertz, which is all spelled out without numbers. So TWE, etc. And go over there, tap subscribe. And the cool thing about our show is that it's completely evergreen. So you can literally tap on anything. There is no through line. Sometimes we put little Easter eggs around, but there is no like you have to listen to this before the other thing. So if something sticks out, most recently we've done just some really fun things on perfect pitch and melodies that you hear all the time, but you never realize that they're all intentional, or like the sound of, you know, how like Tyrannosaurus Rex sound in Jurassic Park was made and how it wasn't, how it's not accurate at all to real life. You know, the Netflix thing, Wilhelm Scream, all kinds of stuff. So all these like little sound things that most people have no idea what the story is behind it. We do these very deep dives that take us over 200 hours every single episode.
Wow.
To craft together. And they're short. They're like 20, 25 minutes, but it's called 20,000 Hertz.
Yeah. And I've been doing what you described. I've been auditing. I've been sort of hopping in and hopping out, you know, with certain topics that catch my interest. For example, the Wilhelm Scream. It's funny because every time my kids and I are watching a Star Wars movie or a Marvel movie, every time mm-hmm. that happens, we turn to each other and we're like, there it is. Every single time.
I haven't put this on our air yet, but I know that Skywalker, where Wilhelm was developed and started, I know they have discontinued it, and I know that they now have a new sound that they're putting in all of these films that no one has discovered yet. I need to put that call out on my own.
That's awesome. Well, if you're listening and you have no idea what we're talking about, listen to that episode and immediately you'll be like, oh yeah, that, right? It's like, yeah, everybody exactly knows that, but they just don't know what it's called.
And I would say, like, if someone in your listening audience is like very much on like the advertising stuff, then I'd go check out DeFacto too. We do silly stuff on Instagram and we do really silly stuff on YouTube where we take like TikTok videos and like re-sound design them. But yeah, on the DeFacto side, we're basically just doing like trailers and ads and all that stuff. So if somebody wants to check that out, that's cool. But since we're here in podcast land, highly recommend 20,000 Hertz.
Fantastic. Well, Dallas Taylor, this has been a wonderful conversation. I'm can't wait to continue to dive into the show 20,000 Hertz. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time. I'm gonna get it.